Okay, I'd like to convene the Finance Committee and welcome everybody back for the special session, which will take place later today. This morning, we're going to be on a fairly tight timeline. We need to be done by 10:45 because the Tax Committee is going to convene. There are four sections in this particular bill that deal with tax provisions, and so they will be taking those up at 11 o'clock, and there are members of this committee that are on taxes as well. So the goal then is to be done by 10:45. With that, we have Representative Caff, who will be the chief author of the bill. Other authors of the bill are currently signing on. The bill, for your information, isn't technically before us because the special session hasn't convened yet and the bill hasn't been introduced. So this is best described as an informational hearing. What I did request was that the authors that are legislators that represented the general areas that were impacted by the bill select a spokesperson from the region in the interest of time to be prepared to comment about the flood and the impact and the needs. And so that's the way we will proceed. If there are others in the audience that have additional information, if time allows, we'll try to plug them in, but let's view that as more resource people if a particular question should come up. So Representative Caff, would you give us, as chief author of the bill, an overview? And then, by the way, there is a change. Chris Ide is over testifying before the Senate. So Wade Setter, where is Wade? Okay, Wade Setter will be representing the Department of Public Safety and commenting after the author gives us an overview. So Representative Camp.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. We'll go through the bill itself. I don't know if you want to take questions as we're walking through
it
or not.
I think why don't you go through the bill first.
Sounds
good. Because we do have that tight timeline, and I do want to at least make sure that the people on the agenda get a chance to testify as well.
Good. Just a quick breakdown. Article 1 goes through the flood. Article 2 then would be with the tornado. So as we're going through it here, you'll see anything that's in Article 1 then would be focused on the flood itself. Section 1 is going to talk about the article itself with the disaster relief appropriation, specifically looking at through Sections 2 and 3 then the 25% match that the state will take care of with the FEMA appropriations. Section 4 puts in $15 million for transportation, $5 million in trunk highway funds for disaster-related operations, and then $10 million in transportation funds for local roads and bridges, including the demolition and design. Section 5 is employment and economic development. It's $10 million that are appropriated from the general fund for the Minnesota Investment Fund grants. That would be through the through deed would be appropriating those. Section 6 is PFA, about $500,000 that they estimated would be necessary for things that are not covered by FEMA for public facilities. Section 7 is the Housing Finance Agency appropriates $4 million for assistance for individuals, which has been heightened now with the fact that we did not get individual assistance as a state for this disaster. So it puts $4 million in for up to $30,000 in loans. That would be some waivers as well for Chapter 12A for the emergency need here, and those would be forgivable after 10 years. Section 8 is Minnesota Historical Society appropriation of $250,000 for disaster damage to historic structures or resources. Section 9 is natural resources, $14 million that is structured as such, $2.5 million in bonds for state facilities, $10 million in bond funds for flood hazard mitigation grants, a lot of this deals with housing and other structures that are in the floodplain, and $500,000 for debris removal from public waters and for flood warning gauges that were damaged in the flooding itself. Also, $1 million in publicly owned bridges for renovation or removal of those publicly owned dams. Section 10 is Bowser, Board of Water and Soil Resources, appropriates $13 million as follows. $10 million for RIM, Reinvest in Minnesota funds, 10% allowed for capital costs of implementation of that, and then $3 million from the General Fund for Erosion and Settlement Control. Section 11 is agriculture, $4 million is what the agency requested to deal with costs that FEMA does not cover for any ag entities. That would be in the rural section of our communities there, trying to make sure that they have disaster assistance for any of those producers. Section 12 is education, $523,000 that deals with enrollment impact aid facilities for eligible school districts if they had to have disaster facilities, as well as disaster relief operating grants and transportation. Section 13, about $250,000 from the general fund for public health, which would include water testing for different wells and such, and evaluation of other health concerns within those affected areas. Section 14, Pollution Control Agency, $400,000 for remediation of property that had petroleum contamination. My understanding is that this is these are funds that would not be appropriated through this bill. It's just that they're utilized, that these are not new monies. These are already in the state general fund. Sections 15, 16, and then 17 through 21 are kind of boilerplate language that deal with just the bond sale authorization, bond sale expenses, city replacement aid, waiving of property tax penalties for businesses or that have damaged property, agricultural homesteads extended, as well as abatement and credit applications waived in Section 21. And then that leaves Section 22, the effective date. Article 2, then, is the Wadena tornado, which would then, from here on, under the declaration, be DR 1921. Section 1 just goes over the full appropriation, along with Section 2 kind of giving the overall statement of where is the appropriation for using the DR 1921 language. The key components of Article 2 are Sections 3, 4, and 5. Section 3 talks about public safety. That would be the $5.2 million federal dollars, the match that we would have, the 25% full match for the 75% in FEMA dollars. Section 4, Employment and Economic Development, $750,000 in bonds for a grant to Wadena for pre-design and design of public facilities that were destroyed after June 17th. As well as in Section 5 deals with the education, about $693,000 of relief payments to that school district for things that were not covered by FEMA, as well as pupil transportation aid that were related to the disaster itself. The rest of that section just kind of deals with the bond sale authorization and the effective date for that article. Section 3, then, or Article 3, excuse me, is cash flow and budget reserve overview. Section 1 deals with the appropriations adjustments that were made through the FMAP dollars that came through. And then Section 2 then just reduces the general fund appropriations to then match those adjustments that are coming in. There is a contingency reduction that deals with making sure that as we have cash flow and if there are any questions there, that the funding for this bill would be prioritized and pushed through to make sure that we are helping those victims in the flood area as well as Wadena. Talks about the balance carried forward, which then goes into the repealer of the human services made in 2010 so that we can effectively take in those FMAP dollars, and then has the effective date at the end. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair and members. If there are any questions, we would definitely exercise those at this time and bring up the appropriate individuals.
Why don't we take a few quick questions, and if members would recognize the fact that we'll probably be gaining additional information as others come forward and testify. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think my question is either to fiscal staff or research for some history. In last year's bill, very near the end of the session, we had an item that provided cash for some people, I believe that would have been in the Red River Valley in that flood portion of the bill. And I raised the question of if we have no cash, how are we doing this? The response I got was, we always do this. In other words, this is a type of flood relief. We always do this. That was the explanation. So do we set any precedent in this bill? Are we doing something, reimbursing people for anything that we have not historically done? Because once you do it, then in a future flood, somebody can say we always do this.
Okay, why don't we, I think you've got a question there that maybe we should hear maybe from Ms. Novak about anything precedent setting, and then Mr. Marks about the very first question I raised when we were dealing with the negotiations was how it was to be paid for, and so that Bill Marks and Matt Mausman from Senate Finance worked on that provision for us.
What I haven't heard yet is that precedent issue. Do we set any precedent for disaster relief?
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not aware of anything in this bill that hasn't been done in other disaster bills. Not everything is done in every disaster response bill, but there's nothing here that hasn't been done in at least one other one. And for the most part, the bill follows the outline that's contained in Chapter 12A, which is the state response to natural disasters.
Okay. Maybe for everybody's information, though, Mr. Marks, why don't you comment a bit about how the payment is being handled? Because that was a very early and kind of a continuing discussion item during negotiations.
Mr. Chair, members, the as far as the cost of this bill is approximately $38.4 million in general fund money. There's also $36.8 million of general obligation bonding in here. There's no estimated debt service cost in the current biennium for that bonding. That would come in beginning in fiscal 2012. So the $38.4 million of general fund expenditures in here is essentially is covered by the fact that we accept additional funds from the federal government for the FMAP, or the Federal Matching Assistance Program, in medical assistance. Because that additional funding is coming, and that's approximately $231 million, the state would spend that amount less of general fund money, and so there's essentially a general fund balance at the bottom line after we accept that money, and that balance would be used to fund this this additional cost of the disaster bill. Any additional funding from that FMAP money would carry forward into the next biennium because of language in this bill as well. There's a section in Article 3 that says any balance would carry forward. That's a requirement to accept the federal FMAP funds. The legislation at the federal level says that that money cannot be put into a rainy day fund by the state, and rainy day fund would be the budget reserve or the cash flow account. So it's section 4 of Article 3 makes an exception to current law, which says any balance goes into the budget. Well, would go into first cash flow account, then budget reserve.
Okay. Representative Hausman, does that cover your question? Okay, Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering also if we've ever in the past, after a disaster, I'm speaking specifically of Section 5 of the bill on the grants, the economic development grants, in light of the legislative auditor's report, if we've ever had stronger language, or if the author would consider any stronger language that would audit this $10 million to ensure that all of these dollars were used for flood-related businesses who are applying for these grants. Because it's not that I don't trust the ranking members of the committees that have oversight, I just don't, you know, to me it seems like it's a more involved process to really evaluate how those monies are spent. I don't know if we've done anything in the past, or if that would be in order to amend the bill to include some additional safeguards. I'm not even sure who I'm asking that question of.
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chair, any money that is spent from the public is subject to audit by the legislative auditor. This bill adds some additional reporting language that wasn't in the last bill, and that's on page 4, starting on lines 4.8 through 4.18. It requires a report before any of the grants are made to the legislature, to the Finance Committee and Ways and Means Committee. And that was put in an attempt to strengthen the criteria.
Mr. Chair and members, I mean, we did have extensive conversation about this in our negotiations about preparing this bill to make sure that any mistakes that were done in the past looking at these types of issues were not repeated here. First and foremost is the fact that we did go back to 12A and make sure that the language is very strong, which it is. And if you look at 12A, it is very specific in the fact that these dollars must be appropriated by the lay of the law, and that we should ensure that. Beyond that, then it goes to the fact that at the local level, we need to make sure that they are following through with that. And that's where the new language came into play here, and that is that before any of those grants are awarded, they must actually go before those committees in both the House and the Senate about what is the criteria that they were using to award them, so that there is, official legislative oversight on that.
Yeah, and
Mr. Chair, I don't,
Representative Pamer.
I just don't see how having it going before the ranking members of committees is sufficient oversight. I mean, I'm a committee chair. I mean, if it came before me and I got a piece of paper, I'm not sure exactly what I would ask or what I would do.
If you take a look, members, and then I'll represent Solberg because he would be one of the committees involved. But if you look at, you have in your packets the current statute 12A, and the law is rather strong on this point. Organizations directly and adversely affected by the disaster are the only ones that qualify. That is current law. And what we did add during the negotiations then was the additional oversight of the committees. But the law is rather strong on this point. But unfortunately, it was not followed, and that's what the legislative auditor was raising the question about. But Representative Solberg.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarification, at least when a report comes across my desk on this type of things, and many of them come across, I immediately go to the fiscal analyst or the staff and say, is there a problem with this? Are they following the law? And if they're not following the law, we say no to it. If they are following the law, and this is many times other type of activities as well. It's not my expertise, but I have a great deal of trust in our fiscal staff to be able to read those bills and give us a good, strong report on them.
Representative Paymark.
Well, Mr. Chair, well, I'm good, but I know what the fiscal analysts do here, and they are all smart people, and they look over their reports very carefully, but that's not the same as doing an audit. And that's not what we're requiring them to do. And our statutes are strong, but people don't always follow them. And to rely on a county attorney in the county where the flood is taking place to exert control over any possible misdeeds, I think, is a bit of a stretch. I don't know. Between now and the time we vote on it, I would hope that there's some additional language that I'd feel more comfortable about it. But
maybe Commissioner McElroy is here. You want to comment very quickly, Commissioner McElroy? Because I do want to get to the testimony of those impacted as well.
And Mr. Chairman and members, I'll be brief. For the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And the legislative auditor raised a legitimate concern about 5 of more than 100 loans made after the 2007 flood, where there was a difference of opinion in the city of Rushford as to what impacted meant. They felt that every business in the community was impacted because of the loss of population, most of the businesses being closed. Neither we had suggested to Rushford that they were being aggressive. Legislative auditor said clearly they didn't follow the law. 12A has improved that because it's clear now that the definition is directly physically impacted. A business to be eligible for assistance has to, in the case of a flood, had water or water damage. All of the loans that we make are subject to audit by the legislative auditor. We've had discussions with Auditor Nobles. In 2007, we provided funding essentially in advance to Rushford because of the magnitude of the damage that they had. We do not intend to do that after this disaster. We'll work with the communities to document their loans and then provide them in flood or funding so that we can be sure businesses were really impacted. So, Representative Thamar, I appreciate your concern. It's a legitimate one. I think the changes made in 12A that were passed in 2008 have addressed, I think, a legitimate interpretation by Rushford, but which was pretty aggressive in terms of the law. They had 80 loans, of which 5 were questioned, 75 were clearly physically watering the business, 5 were on the outskirts of the flood, 1 was just an office prior to this, and the legislative auditor found them aggressive, and we agree with that.
Okay. Hey, Representative Paymar, did you have a follow-up or comment? Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, to Representative Paymar's point, Representative Paymar, I would tend to agree with you and would hope that the chairman of this committee considers convening the committee as a whole when these criteria are brought forward rather than the chairman of the committee and myself looking over it and trying to make a determination that we do bring in many other brains to the table. Commissioner McElroy, to the issue of actually having quote-unquote water in the building, has there been or was there any discussion of actually facilities that have been damaged, physically damaged, having to submit bids for reconstruction? I would think one very objective criteria rather than the more subjective, we believe we've lost business because it feels like it, would be to have as part of the criteria bids for the reconstruction of the physical building.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, to the best of my recollection, all of the loan criteria established by counties or cities required copies of construction estimates. This year we'll also be working. SBA has a damage assessment process that it will, that is very helpful, and we'll be asking for copies of the SBA damage assessment. But yes, the city and county loan criteria required documentation of real damage.
Representative Winkler. Okay. Any more on that particular point? Representative Coles, I think you had an earlier question.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a number of questions. I want to hear from the other witnesses. Just two quick questions for Representative Kath now before the other witnesses.
Representative Coles.
Representative Kath, I just want to make sure that I understand Section 7, the housing finance piece. I think I heard you say, and maybe I misheard you, so I just want to clarify. I think you said that that those loans were forgivable after 10 years. Is that correct, and have we done that before?
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is Representative Coles, Mr. Chair. This is similar to what we did in 2007, or what you did in 2007. They are the Quick Start loans. I believe that the cap was changed here at $30,000, but yes, it is forgivable after 10 years, which has been past precedence.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I've got questions about that, but I'll leave those for now. The only other question for right now before we hear from the other witnesses for me, Mr. Chair, is Representative Kath, is there anything in this bill, and I don't see it, but is there anything in this bill that's not, I guess, kind of a one-time expenditure? Is there anything that would add to the general fund base or any other non-general fund base budget so that we, you know, have we're in increasing the challenges that we have when the legislature convenes next year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, you know, House staff can answer that maybe better than I, but it is my understanding that no, this would not add to that.
Mr. Marcus, do you have anything to add?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, just I guess a sort of an elaboration on it. The bonding in the bill does increase costs in future years. It does not have any direct cost in fiscal 11. All the other appropriations are one time. The bonding is essentially one time, but it's going to be paid for over a number of years. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Marks. Appreciate the distinction.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just picking up on what Representative Paymar was talking about in terms of accountability for the dollars spent, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the reinvest in Minnesota conservation easement portion of that. So I'm curious, Representative Kath, as those dollars are expended, are they expended specifically to deal with conservation easements related to areas that were flooded, or are they going to be expended or available to be expended to further the broader goal of conservation in those counties? Is it specifically flood-related, or is it broader than that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, we had representatives from Bowser come in and speak to that issue, and they said that when they look at these types of projects and how it is actually the language is drafted, is that they can be and they should be towards the concept of flood mitigation. Now, you can't really remove the fact, though, that some of those projects will also create a conservation-type impact as well, but how they will actually be able to put them forward is through flood mitigation as a goal. And I will tell you that Austin, for instance, was one that was brought up, that they were able to utilize that for flood mitigation, and it is actually working very well for them. So that would be the goal here, and if there's anything that would bring that into question, we would want to make sure that that's brought up.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, I appreciate that, Representative Kath, because I was looking at the numbers, and it's a big number for that program of $10 million. And I look at, when you look at the former or the past flood relief bills, those numbers were much, much less. And so it seemed to me that it might be being used for a broader goal, or to achieve a broader goal than just to mitigate or deal with the flood impacts. For example, in the 2007 flood relief bill, that number was a $1 million number, and it was subsequently a $500,000 number in a different bill. So I'm just, that $10 million is a big number, and so I just wanted to put that on the table.
Mr. Chair, Representative Braun, I believe that that is something that that is a good question to bring up, and I think one that we can answer here with the fact that Bowser did come in, and they actually brought in just for Wabasha County the concept that they would need to have about $10 million just for that county to be able to do the flood mitigation that would be necessary, and that is what the agency brought forward as an estimate was $10 million. When we're looking at it from the concept then of, you know, where do we go from here? Well, we looked at it as, are we going to have enough available for, you know, mitigation to, you know, put at ease some of these communities that are seeing this flooding on a repetitive basis. Beyond that, though, I think what is really important to note here is the difference between Rushford and this flood is the topography in general, and Bowser spoke to that in saying that how some of these flood mitigation funds and RIM funding can actually be utilized in this section of the state can actually be much more effective than maybe in another area that was impacted, such as Rushford.
Okay, Representative, if we can be really quick, because I do want to get to the testimony. Representative House?
I just have a question on this.
Okay.
Representative Kath, on the local road and bridge rehabilitation and replacement, I'm getting letters and phone calls and emails from township officers wanting to make sure that they're not eliminated in some way from this bill. They're included. They will get help.
Mr. Chair, Representative House, absolutely. That was a very, very strong conversation that we had in these negotiations to make sure that all of our county roads, having grown up in a township, I know the needs of those township roads, and we had extensive conversations about that to make sure that the funding that we have in the transportation section of this bill would cover anything that was not brought forward in the FEMA section.
Representative Kiffner.
My question is, I have a couple, just a quick one in regards to the Department of Health and testing wells. Does this include private wells, public wells, and is anybody charged for that testing, or is this completely paid for through this money?
Mr. Chair, I think that we should bring someone up that would have, from the Department of Health, that would be able to speak to what they have done in the past.
Maybe that can be, oh, they're coming forward already.
Mr. Chair, good morning. John Stein from the Health Department. Question was regarding, could I hear the question again, which wells would be eligible and what's covered?
The question is, Mr. Chairman, is that are these both public and private wells, and is there any additional charge to anyone for the testing of the wells other than this money that is granted here?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. There's no charge, and it does include public and private wells.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was a good, quick address of that. I do have one other one, and that may be addressed by our testifiers, but maybe if I just mention it so we might make sure we include that. And that has to do with the housing issues, and in particular, some have flood insurance, some don't. And then there are seniors that getting loans isn't a very good solution for them. So it's those kinds of areas that I want to be sure that maybe it might be addressed in future testimony. Or
okay. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the agenda then. Now I'm not sure who's going to be here for the department because we've got two present. So why don't you both come forward in that? Yeah. Ms. Hyde, are you going to be the testimony then? You were, we announced earlier you were over at the Senate. You know, and my daughter married a fellow with the same spelling, E-I-D-E, and they pronounce it Ide, but some people pronounce it Ide. So could you tell me which the correct?
Mr. Chair, it's Ide.
Ide, yes. Okay.
From the Ide Fjord. So.
Tell you about Georgia.
Well, Mr. Chair and members of
the he has that same background, but they do for some reason pronounce it Ide. But at any rate, Ide, okay.
Thank
Ms. Ide.
Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I do apologize for being late. I was testifying in the Senate, and I think I'll focus on the purpose of this bill really was for disaster relief. As you all know, we did a preliminary damage assessment immediately after the flood, we declared a state of emergency for 35 counties across southern Minnesota. We asked the Federal Emergency Management Agency to join us in a joint preliminary damage assessment, which is a team of federal, local, and state personnel that go out and look at the areas that county emergency managers have deemed to be damaged. We don't look at absolutely every road. We don't look at absolutely every facility. It is a preliminary number. And just in the first 21 counties that we were able to get into, we came up with about $45 million of uninsured flood-related damage. And you have to remember that the Federal Emergency Management Agency is not the first source of relief. The first source of relief is insurance. So for public facilities, we look at uninsured losses. In those first 21 counties, as I said, it came to about $45 million of uninsured loss. We also look at the individual families. And this is not a threshold like it is in public administration. In the public assistance program, we need $6.4 million of damage to uninsured damages to qualify for a major presidential major declaration. For individual families, they go by indicators. And indicators are a little mushy, and it's not always consistent. And when we went out and looked at individual homes, they are very concentrated in small communities. We had members from the Small Business Administration also on our team, and they determined that there was about 13 point something million dollars of potential damage to these homes. And we requested 11 counties for individual assistance where families were actually affected in more than onesies and twosies, as we say. And the FEMA looked at it for a long time and seriously considered the impact statewide. We look at the impact locally, we look at the impact statewide, we look at the level of insurance in the area, and then they make their determination. And in this instance, as in several other instances in the recent past, they determined that it was not beyond the capability of families, local government, and the state government to take care of the damages. We did then subsequently request that the Small Business Administration make an agency declaration, and we did receive that declaration on Friday. So we have SBA agents down in our disaster recovery centers located in Truman, Mazeppa, and Owatonna, meeting with homeowners, helping them fill out the paperwork to apply for a loan, which you are right, Representative Kiffmeyer, it's not the the best solution to many of our families. Right now it's the only solution that we have along with Minnesota Housing and Finance Quick Start Program. There was about, as I said, $13.6 million to families. SBA determined there was around $5.5-6 million to the businesses that they looked at. And again, they did not look at every single business. But it is not going to take care of the damages and the recovery of these communities. We do look at relief. We understand that that this will not take care of a lot of the things in the future. We also made sure that we did follow Chapter 12A, which is a very good piece of legislation that was passed in 2008 after the 2007 floods in southeast Minnesota. But there are some things that we've learned over the past that we will be having an agency initiative to amend that chapter so that we can take care of some of the things that were either in oversight or that we've learned in the past that we may need to have in that chapter. Other than that, we are now going to be asking that 9 counties be added on to this declaration, but we've already done the preliminary damage assessment, and the funds that are in the public safety section will take care of the 25% non-federal match that FEMA requires of any major declaration.
Okay, are there any questions? Well, thank you, and I want to personally thank you. When we were working on the bill, she was present through all of those negotiations, and you were a great resource, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
The proceeding on the agenda then, Chris, is it Boozy?
Boozy, that would be our, Mr. Chair, would be our city administrator, yeah, for the city of Owatonna. And I would also like to invite down our emergency management leader, Mike Johnson.
Okay, and how did you pronounce that?
Boozy.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, while they're getting set up here, I would also like to recognize that we do have our Mayor, Tom Kuntz, as well as our county engineer, Anita Benson, here as well for any questions that members may have.
Okay. Yeah, and if any members weren't here at the beginning, I requested the representatives in the area that were impacted to contact a lead spokesman in the interest of time, and then if others wanted to be available for questions, that we would approach it that way. So, welcome, and if you could both identify yourself for the record. And
sure. I'm Chris Boozy. I'm the city administrator for the city of Owatonna.
I'm Mike Johnson, the emergency management director for Steele County.
Okay, and welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Owatonna suffered a devastating flood, and we are very appreciative of the bill that was put together of Representative Kath and Senator Perry working on this. It's really desperately needed in our community, and what we've done for you, my emergency management director Mike Johnson was throughout this event just a tremendous asset to our community, to our city, and to our county, and he's put together a PowerPoint for you that will tell our story even better than we can in words, in pictures, and give you a real feel for what our communities went through, what our homeowners went through, what our business owners went through. These are major, huge events that people's lives are disrupted, people's livelihood just major life functions are forever altered by this flood. I'll turn it over to Mike.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to present a PowerPoint just to discuss what happened in Steele County and the city of Owatonna, describe why we need assistance that's here, and then describe what is needed for our community to recover from this flooding, and then answer any questions as needed. I'd like to proceed with that.
That'll be fine.
Okay. On September 22nd, we had significant flooding in our community, and we've had flooding issues before in our community, but we haven't had flooding like this in the Steele County and in the Owatonna area. We were aware of this because we had a flood warning from the National Weather Service, and we started doing some routine pumping in our city, which we do when we normally have significant rainfalls. We got a call early in the morning on the 22nd. We anticipated that it was going to be a bad flood just because of the way the water was rising on our gauges, and we knew that we had to start some emergency operations, and at that time we declare a state of emergency, which authorizes us to implement our emergency operations plan. We also contact the state EOC and advise them that we're in a state of emergency in Steele County. Some of the things that we had to do in the response phase, when we go into a state of emergency, we have to do protective measures that are there, and there's costs associated with that that aren't in our normal day-to-day operating budgets that are there. We had to do emergency pumping operations in several areas of the city. We had, at one point, we had over 70 road closures, which required us to go through and put barricades or put law enforcement in those areas. We did a total of 6 water rescues during the flood event in Steele County in the city of Owatonna, and we had to evacuate 2 areas of our city, which we never had to evacuate before, because homes were being inundated with water and they couldn't get in and out of those areas. We started a disaster log and we implemented all of our disaster organizations in Steele County. What happened in our county, if you look at this map, these are rainfall amounts over a 24-hour period. This is why it created significant problems for us. If you look on the map, you'll see the area where Owatonna is. We had 7 to 8 inches over that 24-hour period, which our stormwater sewer system and our facilities can't handle that type of rainfall. That's why we had the significant flooding. We have 5 gauges in our river that we went through and we monitored for flooding. We got accurate data for all of those except one, which was actually underwater, so we couldn't read the gauge anymore. So we realized at that point it was going to be a significant flood. In Owatonna, according to the National Weather Service, we had 7.91 inches of rainfall over a short period of time. And this shows some of the other areas, which it wasn't just our area that was affected. It was a lot of communities across the state affected by this heavy rainfall. We build in our communities. We build to a 100-year event. Those are some of the standards that we use in the floodplain, the flood fringe area, when we go through and allow building in those areas. And that standard for a 100-year event is 6 inches over a 24-hour period. And a 500-year flood event is about a 2.2% chance of that flood. That's 8 inches over a 24-hour period. We were very close to a 500-year event with this flood. The other thing that happened in our area is we had 12.54 inches of rain in the month of September, so we were already saturated, our groundwater was, so we had significant rain already in place, and this was a record rainfall for us. We went through, we did our normal things that we do. We request assistance from the state of Minnesota. We requested assistance from the governor to declare a state of emergency, and then we did our preliminary damage assessments, which Director Ide just discussed with you on our PA and our IA. And then the governor declared a request for federal disaster assistance through FEMA. I'm going to go through some pictures here so you can see the scope of the kind of problems that we were dealing with at that time. With over 70 road closures, this created big problems for us. At one point in Owatonna, we couldn't get across the river. We had to drive halfway to the city of Medford just to get to the other side. In addition to all of our roads being closed by the river and the flooding, Interstate 35 was shut down for 9 hours, both northbound and southbound in Owatonna, which created additional problems for us. Some of the problems that we had with these roads and some of the damages is the water actually washed away the roads. As you can see here, this is one of our roads that created a problem for us. That problem, as you can see, we had one vehicle. This is an overview of one of the rescues and one of the issues we had. That road that you looked at in the previous slide,
The driver of that vehicle drove around the barricade, which we had in place. The car was swept away, and the car went into an electrical interchange here. We had mutual aid response from several fire departments and water rescue vehicles that were there. And in this case, the driver was on top of the vehicle, jumped from the vehicle. Actually, we could not make the rescue. Our rescuers went in. And we had Forest Lake Fire Department there, and they lost their rescue boat trying to do the rescue. It sunk in this rescue. And the rescuers went through. This is an electrical interchange, which was live at the time. And the firefighters broke through the fence and floated through that interchange, which was a very dangerous thing for us to do these rescues. Unfortunately, that we lost the boat, and there was a lot of damage to that power plant. This is owned by Steel Waseca Cooperative. That's a picture of the boat that's damaged, which is there that we have to reimburse that community for. And we were able to rescue that person from there, but that was one of six water rescues that we did that day. We also had to do protective measures. This would be the evacuation and flooding. These are normally covered under the public assistance program through FEMA, which we were declared. This covers sandbagging. In this picture here, you can see that our wells, not only we talked about rural wells, but in the city, our wellhead for well number two was actually going underwater. And the only way to protect our city water supply was to sandbag that, which we did all night and into the next day. And we were able to save that area through these protective measures. But unfortunately, our dike broke that we had at our public utilities. That's why members of our community are up there the way still sandbagging, trying to save that well, even though we had lost the dike. And we were successful at that. This just shows the dike at Owatonna Public Utilities that was there. That actually failed. We simply could not get the dike in place and reinforce it fast enough with that amount of rainfall, and we lost that area due to flooding. We had a lot of protective measures in residential areas. This is sandbagging and an evacuation. The Maple Creek, Turtle Creek, the Straight River were all waterways that flooded in Steele County, and simply we did not have enough resources to do the effective sandbagging operations, even though we used over 60,000 sandbags during this event. Which was quite remarkable to go through and do that. This shows an overview, which I think is important to see what happened to our community. This is the Hoffman Drive that goes through the community that's there, and you can see that's one of our main areas. I can't use a pointer on this, but if you look on this facility, why this is expensive, this instance for us, on the lower left corner, that's our city public works building. That's where we get our gas, that's where we get our trucks, our front end loaders, to do our flood fight, and you can see that's underwater. Just to the center of the screen, you'll see a building that's there. That's our county highway building. Same thing, that's where our front end loaders stand, all our equipment is located. As far as critical infrastructure, we lost both our county and our city public works buildings during this flood, and we couldn't operate on both sides of the river. You can see businesses that were affected. We had over 25 businesses that were affected by this flooding. SBA, Small Business Administration, had come in. They're providing assistance for this. This is our State Farm Insurance office in town here, and you can see how it's affected those businesses that were there. We had never seen flooding like this before in our community. This is an aerial photograph showing the same area over our utilities area. When the dike broke, the water went back through this residential area and went up into these homes, and it filled their basements up. And that was one of the biggest problems we had. We had to evacuate that area, and most of those homes had their basements completely full of water, and many of them had water on the first floor of that, the residential areas that were there. This just shows what it was like for some of those businesses. This is just one home that was there, and it shows the water level that was there. We did evacuate these areas, but it did significant damage to those homes. That's one of the important things, is why we're here, why we're asking for assistance. These would be areas where homes would be declared under the FEMA Individual Assistance Program, which we were denied. So many of these homes are not going to get any kind of assistance without this bill. This shows some of the speed that it came in. We were able to evacuate some of our campgrounds, but they simply did not have time to even get their campers out of there. This is an overview of the Steele County Highway Public Works building that's here. We have our county engineer here, Anita Benson. That building is probably not going to be able to be rebuilt or reused just because of the damage that occurred on site there. actually. You can see how that affected our building. You can see some of the slicks from the oil. We talked about some of the cleanup from petroleum products that occurs after this. This shows, this is a day and a half afterwards. This is Interstate 35, just south of Owatonna. And you can see it's opening up again, but that area is completely underwater. This just shows our Owatonna Public Utilities building. You'll see our cooling towers for the electric plant that's there, and you can see the plant is completely underwater, and most of the equipment was destroyed that was at that facility. That was a backup generation area that could be used, and we weren't able to get the stuff out of there because it was a permanent fixed site. So that received heavy damage in that area. Again, you can see how this went through the community into the residential areas of Walnut area in Owatonna. As far as protective measures, a lot of costs go into this, and one of the things we had to do is use a lot of mutual aid, which we have to reimburse, which we can get through that FEMA program. But literally, we had to divide our city into two areas because we couldn't cross the river. So our emergency medical services, fire, law enforcement, and all of our sandbagging and public works had to be in two separate areas, and we had to logistically put sand and sandbags on both sides of the river because we couldn't get across anymore. And that's something we've never had to do before. Residential flooding, sanitary sewer backups. A lot of these people, this is the Maple Drive area that was affected. They had sanitary backup and water right to the floor joists of their home. We've had many of these homes that actually had the walls collapse because of the pressure that was on the walls that are there. And many of the residents of our community, that's what they're interested to see, what kind of help they can get, because they were not covered. Even though they can get flood insurance, if they weren't in the floodplain, many of them didn't have flood insurance. So they found out that they were inadequately covered for this event and the damages to their home. They're stuck there. In this area here, I know of at least three homes where the residents are just going to walk. They said they're just going to walk away from the home. They can't afford the payments before the flooding, and now they had the flooding happen, and they can't fix this because they don't have any kind of funding for this. So this is a real concern of mine, is what's going to happen to this area here unless we can provide some kind of assistance that was there. And again, the FEMA IA program will not be available to these residents. One of the problems we have, this just shows an overview of our pre-floodplain map. They were in the flood fringe. They weren't in the floodplain. And with the new mapping that's coming out currently, you can see an overview that now those homes are going to actually be in the flood plain area that was there. And this changed not at a fault to the property owners. It was just simply when those first maps were created, we didn't have the technology to do the topography on the maps. And now we do. So many of them are finding out that they're actually in the floodplain now, and they weren't before. So we're in the process of going through and making those changes. This just shows our American Red Cross damage assessments for Steele County. We had over 263 homes that the Red Cross did individual or home damage assessments that were there in Steele County. The homes are either destroyed, major damage, minor damage, or affected. That's the rating that they use when they go through and do these assessments. This is a quick snapshot. You probably can't see it very well, but there's dots on this map, and it shows where most of our flooding is. The red dots are destroyed homes that are there. The orange dots are with major damage. The yellow dots are minor damage that are there. And this just shows the overview of the Maple Creek area and the Straight River area where most of our damage occurred in Steele County, and this is in the city of Owatonna itself. One of the things that we're looking at is, and we talked a little bit about this earlier, is mitigation projects that will help eliminate this. In my opinion, most of these are preventable damage to these properties. We can put money into these with sandbagging and protective measures, but if we do mitigation, we can prevent these damages from occurring from flooding. And I think that's money well spent when you put it into mitigation programs. This just shows our watershed area where the flooding occurred. This is an overview, and it's basically the Straight River watershed and the Maple Creek watershed. Now I put an overview of what kind of rainfall occurred over that large watershed area, and all of that watershed goes into the city of Owatonna through the Maple Creek and through the Straight River, and that's why we had that significant flooding that's there. So our long-term solution to this is to mitigate this, put some kind of system in place to slow the water down, to prevent the flooding from occurring so we don't have to ever do this again. But right now, our immediate need is to take care of the problems of the people that live in these areas that flooded. So we're in the recovery mode right now. To give you an overview, we've met with every one of the homeowners. We've had a homeowner request form. Building officials determine if they can move back into their structure or not, if it's safe or not. So many of them, it's not their choice. They were told they can't move back into this property because the structural integrity of the building is affected. As far as damage assessments, we did the individual assistance. We will not get that for FEMA for this event. That's why I think this is very important for this bill, because the quick start loans is the only thing that many of these residents can go to if this is approved, to help them to rebuild and recover from this flooding. So I'm here to tell you that I think it's a very good program, and that's one of the things that can help the individual homeowner. The public assistance, we do have that in place, and we're doing damage assessments with FEMA, and we're actually starting to go through and do some of the recovery process with that. That'll take care of some of our critical infrastructure costs. But some of that's taken care of by insurance first, then it'll be taken care of by FEMA. But there are some additional costs that are there associated with this. And one example is we're not really sure how to get the debris out of Maple Creek and out of the Strait River. And we're having several discussions to figure out who's actually responsible for debris removal. Is that something that can happen through FEMA, or is it going to be through one of the other organizations within the state? But we do have some issues, because at this time we haven't figured out how we're going to get that debris out. We do know one thing: if we don't get the debris out of those rivers and those waterways in the spring when we flood and the ice jam hits that debris, we're going to have backups and we're going to have floods again. So we have no choice. We have to remove the debris out of those areas. And then we are working with the Small Business Administration. As Director Ide has said, they've set up shop in one of the disaster recovery centers in Owatonna, and we're taking applications. Homeowners and businesses can take it or make an application request for assistance, and if they're rejected, I think we're looking at other options. I think that's part of your bill, to figure out how you fund those people that are going to fall through the cracks of these organizations that are there. We're working with the Red Cross, Salvation Army. I put this on here because I just want you to know that there's a lot of relief organizations offering assistance and they're helping people, but it's not enough to help people recover from the structural damage that they have. So one of the big things we're working with is debris clearance, a lot of debris, and we're removing all of this. We take care of household hazardous waste, demolition, and construction debris, and then their white goods, and that all goes into our landfill, which is additional cost for our county to take care of this debris clearance that's there. We're looking at the mitigation projects, and I hope this will be part of this process of recovery for us. And then the things that we're looking for assistance, we were hoping to get IA. We found out that we're not going to get individual assistance from FEMA. We're hoping that this is approved through your work, which we can offer quick start loans to help some of these homeowners, and we're working with the Small Business Administration for some of these. One other part of this is when FEMA comes in on the PA, Public Assistance Program, we get 75% that's there. In my understanding in this bill, that the additional 25% would be covered through this, which is greatly appreciated. We simply do not have the funds to try and go through and do some of the repairs to this critical infrastructure without that funding. So, and then, of course, we'll be working with the mitigation funds that are there. That's my conclusion.
Well, thank you. We've got three other communities to hear from. Representative Wagenius, I'm not sure if I passed over you relative to this testimony or earlier. You were on the list, and I didn't look at the list. Okay, you're okay. Representative Khanna, very quick one.
Very quick question on the debt. What do you see in the way of mitigation projects and mitigation funding? Just very briefly.
To answer the question, what I see as projects for mitigation funding, we've done successful projects in our community for flooding before, and in this particular case, some type of a waterway project, such as retention ponds or a buffer area, that can be put in the rural area of Steele County, can actually hold that water and take some of the pressure off of Maple Creek and the Strait River. And that's good use of funding, because that water will go there. It'll go into the waterway at a slower rate of time, which will eliminate that flooding.
Is there...
Representative Khan.
Just quickly, is there... a retention project done with wetlands or through construction or what? What kind of retention are you looking at?
The process we would normally use would be to have a study by an engineering firm, and they would design a plan for the capacity of water that has to go through. And then we would normally apply through the FEMA mitigation program. It's a grant program to go through and put that in place. The timeline is, I would say, at the very shortest would be a year and a half for us to go through and complete that process to actually get that mitigation project in place.
Okay. Well, thank you. We're going to... Representative Rod.
Well, actually, that just brings me back to the conversation related to RIM and flood mitigation money. I'm just trying to figure out, in terms of appropriateness of the program, if mitigation is the goal, which I agree it is and it should be, why I'm trying to figure out why we're not using flood mitigation grant process versus a RIM procedure. You know, because they're two very different things. When I look at the goals of RIM, when it was established, the goals of RIM, the $10 million in the program, RIM is Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program must be based on enhancement potential for fish, wildlife, native plant habitats, erosion, and water quality. So what I'm trying to get to is why we're not using flood mitigation grant processes to fix some of these things that we all know need to be fixed if we want to mitigate things in the future. And I guess that's more a question for Representative Kath, but it just the conversation about mitigation to me is really important, because the mitigation is what we're needing to do.
Great. Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, both are in the bill, actually. There are flood mitigation grants within the bill, as well as the RIM funding as well. And what's nice about the RIM dollars is that from between 60% and 75% are matched by the feds as well. So it gives us more of a potential. Bowser has also spoken to the impact that this can have on flooding and flood mitigation in general, and that's really how we're trying to foresee this, is that what other communities have actually utilized this for has really comprehensively helped with mitigation. And so what we're saying is that it is working for that, so why not use a program that already is in place in these counties? And through Bowser, they're talking about the impact, saying that right now they can get on the ground, they can go into these areas, these rural lands that right now are already damaged, they can have those conversations with those farmers, and they can have the conversations with the landowners in general, and actually get some of these projects going, so that year and a half is just a year and a half, not 2 to 3 years that might happen if we wait any longer.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kath, I think that's great, but what I'm trying to suggest is that the way the language is written in the law is not that broad, and so I'm glad to hear that it's being used that way, and so maybe at some point we should consider expanding out the purpose of the RIM dollars as opposed to having it, the way it's written, it's drafted very narrowly for fish, wildlife, and water, not mitigation. So maybe we'll want to consider expanding that out so that you can have that that dovetailing of two programs to make them work better together.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I would concur.
Okay, let's move to the...
Just one correction to that. All of those things benefit fish, wildlife, and, and natural resources. You know, Representative Broad, you're a woman, and you're supposed to be able to think of more than one thing at one time. So you have to understand that things can work in two ways.
Representative Kahn, thanks for noticing.
The question I was just commenting on is, can you think of more than two things at one time?
And we, just for the information members, when we were negotiating this, we had these very discussions about more than one outcome when we were investing in RIM. So we thoroughly explored that, and we did bring in expert testimony from Bowser on this overall issue. And I think everybody's correct. There is more than one outcome. I would like to, we're down to about 20 minutes in three communities. Representative Kiffmeyer, can you be real quick?
I can, Mr. Chairman, and thank you.
One of them is all the way from Wadena. So.
This is, yes, and we definitely want to make sure, this is specific to Owatonna, to Mr. Johnson. In the talk of mitigation, when I saw your slides and looking at your response vehicles, your utilities in the water, and I'm sure that inhibited maybe some of your response as well when your own emergency vehicles, and I know that was also in New York an issue, that their emergency management was in the World Trade Towers. They were thinking of hurricanes and water not of the kind of emergency that they had. And it's very hard to anticipate that, but once you have one and you live in the area like you do, I would suppose you are also thinking that if you are rebuilding, those considerations are improving that as well. So I just would like to just quickly, just a couple comments that that is the direction you're going to improve your ability to respond in where you rebuild or how you rebuild.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, we are looking at that as far as, I'm sorry if I had the ball. I apologize, Representative Kipmeyer. So we are looking at that. One of the things we look at is when that facility is damaged, such as our county highway building, we are looking at the option, does it make sense to repair it at where it's at or just to move it in an area where it's not going to be affected by flooding, because that's one of our critical infrastructure.
And the both sides of the river as well. I noticed that was kind of an interesting situation where you were divided. And
thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Fritz, would you like to come down and introduce the people that you brought in? And I'd ask the next three if you can kind of watch the time, because we're due out of here in 20 to 25 minutes, and we...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I can begin while he's setting up. We do have some pictures that we would like to show you. However, thank you to Mr. Johnson for the great PowerPoint. And Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for letting us be here today. I represent District 26B, and that's parts of Rice County and Steele County, 13 and a half townships. Most of my geography is in Steele County. However, on Friday morning, the day of the flood, the disaster in my district, I woke up Friday morning and drove to Medford, which is just a few miles from where I live on County Road 45. That, too, was underwater. However, I was able to get to Medford, drove around behind the Catholic Church and parked, got out and walked down to the park, which was full of water. Many of the students had already been recruited from the Medford High School to sandbag, and actually this is quite an experience being a state legislator. Many new experiences, and that is one experience I wish I would have never had, and that was sandbagging for the first, I hope, last time in my life. At that time, however, my mayor in Faribault was sandbagging most of the night. That I did not realize until I received a phone call from him close to noon that day while I was still in Medford. And the phone call was, I could hear in his voice terror. And he said to me, "Patty, can you get the governor to come to Faribault? Our wastewater treatment plant has just gone underwater." Well, I'm very familiar with the wastewater treatment plant because a few years ago, thanks to you folks and Chairman Hausman, we did receive $25 million in bonding money for upgrades, much needed upgrades for that facility. And we had just put $14 million into it. And, of course, it was underwater along with many of our businesses and the like in my district and homeowners. And I do want to just mention one more time about the Quick Start program and how important that is to the citizens in my community who live down on the north end. That has sort of always been the stigma of where the poor people live. And these are my wonderful friends and people I've worked with for 30 years in the nursing home. And a laundry woman who lost work because she had to clean raw sewage out of her basement. These are people who did have flood insurance, but their insurance only covers $5,000 of $16,000 worth of damages in that home, and others along the way who actually lost their homes. There is no way that they can live in those homes. Their hot water heaters and furnaces are gone. They not only got water, they got raw sewage, 4 feet of it into their basements that they had to get help cleaning out. So I was very, very connected then after I got back to Faribault, got the governor to come to Faribault, the mayor, and I met with him and also the city engineer, and I have become very bonded with these two gentlemen to my right. And I want to introduce to you to them, and they have some additional information on the damage that we occurred in our district. This is Mayor John Jajinski to my right, and then next is Tim Murray, our city engineer. And
thanks,
Mayor.
Patty. Mr. Chair, my name is Mayor John Jajinski. I do want to thank you for having us here today and thanking Patty for bringing us along. We've had great support from everyone as elected officials. Patty Fritz, Speaker Margaret Anderson Kelleher came into town. Senator Mike Perry has been well involved. U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar came to town, and Governor Tim Pawlenty as well. So we do want to say thanks to them. There's two things I'd like to briefly go today. I know we're in time frame, and Owatonna did a great presentation. Basically, the same type of issues hit Faribault. A little bit more unique is our wastewater treatment plant, which Tim Murray is here. We'll go over. But two things I'd like to say. Number one, I'm about the proudest mayor I could be for representing Faribault, who did an excellent job cooperating, working as a team, and keeping Faribault up and alive. We did extreme. Didn't get the overall amount of effect as Owatonna did, but our certain pockets of areas did get deeply hit and hurt. So our team, our staff, our city of Faribault did a great job. I feel I want to emphasize that we did tremendous measures to get this flood alleviated and least possible damage as possible. But we obviously did get some major damage to our area. So we're looking for some assistance in that. We share our loss with our neighboring communities of Owatonna and Northfield and those areas, but we would like to show some of our areas that we did get damage on. On Thursday, September 23rd, I did wake up my normal 6 a.m. And didn't expect I'd be up for the next 38 hours after that. I was involved, as many as our city workers were. Most of us were up that time. Between sandbagging, delivering sandbags, and all other items, we spent a lot of time in the community. A couple brief statistics. We had 16 businesses damaged, 72 homes damaged, and 59 sewer backups. We are equally concerned about our individual homes, our businesses, and our public facilities, which we'll go over here briefly. And again, the IA assistance, not getting that, is going to have some impacts we want to bring to you, and look for this bill, which will do good things for that. But given the economics of the current economic times, we need to be given importance for this assistance. I'd like to discuss the public facilities, our wastewater treatment plant. As Patty said, $26 million upgrade. We did our best to save the facility, but at 9:30 a.m. on Friday, we did lose our facility as far as operations. We went through this facility, and we had an employee that's been there 35 years and was looking to retire after this plant was up and running after being remodeled. And the look on his face when we lost the plant was like losing his first child. He had worked hours and hours with Tim Murray and the rest of our staff to keep this plant up and operating. We had overnight sandbag operations. We built dikes. But again, unfortunately, we did lose the operation of that. We also have five significant industrial users in town: Faribault Foods, Faribault Dairy, the Turkey Store of Faribault, a Minnesota Correctional Facility, which has a laundry operation that contributes about $1.8 billion to your general fund per year in laundry operations, and our Minnesota Municipal Power Agency is also one of our big water users. We actually voluntarily asked them to stop operations, which they did, which we are very thankful for, which allowed us to do as much as we could to save the facility. And Tim will go into some details on that. We also received some other minor damages to some parks and things like that, as did Owatonna. I'm not going to go into those for a matter of time. I'd like to discuss some private impacts, and if we can go to the pictures here, Tim, on the first one. Faribault Dairy is our cheese cave in town here. We produce blue cheese in Faribault. This is one of our, I say, the best stories of survival. Their employees, I was involved, I think you see my picture out there somewhere, sandbagging. This operation started about 3:30 on Thursday. It was sandbagged. It's right along the river. They had $3.5 million worth of cheese in the caves that have been aging for about 2 years. That has to go through a 3-year process. All these things were saved with a dike that was built by local contractors and their employees, city staff, and everyone really did a team effort to save this facility. So this was one of the best things we did save. The next one under there is a Lockerbie sheet metal on the top. That was probably one of the hardest hit. That had about 6 to 7 feet of water in their hardest hit. That had about 6 to 7 feet of water in their whole building. It was hit pretty hard. The next one, Faribault Foods there, that's their office operation. But Faribault Foods also does packing of beans, kidney beans, all kinds of different bean operations. They were actually asked to stop operation. Their CEO was a past mayor of Faribault, so he voluntarily stopped operations, and we're talking 400 to 500 employees. Shut it down. They're actually converted to spray field operations now until our wastewater treatment plant is up and operating at full capacity, and they're doing that in assisting us to get that going. The other one is the Turkey Store. We don't have a picture here. They discharge about 1 million gallons per day into our sewer system, and they've been shut down for 6 days. Again, 400 to 500 employees, unemployment, all kinds of things. And all these businesses do have business interruption assistance, but at the point when we were going through this, they were actually in jeopardy of losing customers because they could fulfill orders. So that was one of our concerns, was to get these businesses up and operating. I think we did a great job. We were only down 6 days, and those businesses did good. The one in front of you here is the Faribault Woolen Mills. Faribault Woolen Mills is one of our icon businesses in Faribault. That's gone through some economic times, tough economic times, a bad timing issue with this. The Friday before, I met with a company looking to come in and resurrect this mill and bring it back into operations and bring back 50 to 60 jobs. They were damaged by about $1 million to $1.5 million in damage on this facility, and it was vacant. So how this falls in the difference between public assistance and private and the individual is going to be difficult because it is vacant, but we are looking to use this as an economic tool to get things back in town and to bring some jobs back. The woolen mills, we're going through that. Again, just going through the cooperative efforts, our city employees did a great job. Local contractors, we were fortunate that our past director of public works actually has a private business in town, BCM Construction. We hired him to come in and assist the city with reconstructing and saving our facility. Metcon Companies, Hazleton Construction. We actually had students from Shattuck and St. Mary's, a private school, come in on Friday morning and started sandbagging at 8 a.m. And they had 40 students every 2 hours would come in and start new. And they went until 8 p.m. on Friday evening, so they did a great job. We had Faribault Dance Line in the community. They were collecting money on the corners for Red Cross and the Salvation Army. So there's a great cooperative effort by Faribault. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Tim Murray to go through our public works facility, which was damaged the most heavily of our public side, and go through some of the details of that. So,
thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'll just touch briefly on really our sewer system impacts. We mentioned the flooding came up in our water reclamation facility the afternoon of the 23rd. We tried building up the dike. The facility is located along the Strait River, just upstream of the confluence with the Cannon Rivers. And we tried to build up the berm, number one, along the Strait River. We were unable to keep the river out. We then kind of fell back, tried to sandbag off the building on the right here. The white building is our main headworks building where all the pumping for the facility takes place. And we kept the water out for a time being, but eventually lost that early Friday morning and had to pull the plug on the plant. This is a different part of the plant. There are actually tanks under all this water, treatment tanks, and a splitter box where water's going in. So we're getting water in from the surface. Direct from the flood. We're also getting water in. This picture of the blue line shows up at all, hopefully. This is part of our collection system on the river right across from the water reclamation facility, and these are called siphon boxes, but they're on pipes that go under the river, collect the main part of Faribault, come under the river into the treatment plant. The blue line, if you can see that, which basically follows the tree line, that's where the river moved to during the course of this flood. So we lost our main siphon complex that comes into our treatment plant. So in addition, as I showed on the previous photos where we had floodwaters coming in the buildings and in the tanks from the top, we also had compromises in the collection system, so we were bringing the river straight in through the pipes. These are those boxes that are now literally out in the river. We're in the process of removing them, but this was taken shortly thereafter, so they are now in the river. We'll be constructing a new one about 170 feet back from the current location. This is just, again, sort of a little bit of an overall picture where the water reclamation facility is on the upper right, and again, that siphon complex. And here the blue line shows up a little better. That is the new riverbank that has formed because of the flood. And everything in yellow are new lines that we've actually started putting in. We've let two emergency contracts. We have a third contract that we'll be looking to do here. I think just in this area alone, on those infrastructure facilities, cost estimates are about $1.2 million. We've also, in the course of all this, as the mayor mentioned, the treatment plant was shut down Friday morning, and we were, at least for the only time, or at least the time in known history, had to bypass to the river. That was where the shutdown of the major industries came in to try to minimize that. We were fortunate, I guess, if you want to look at one way, we never lost our water system, the potable water system for town, so at least people had water. We were lucky in that regard. So we did, over time, get the collection system isolated off, get the treatment plant pumped back down, and we're able to then get back online 6 days later and then allow the industries to come back on. And a good cooperative story there. They ramped their production back up even when they were able to come back online so that we could get the plant as we're going through different components. Because everything that was submerged, everything electrical, pumps, motors, wiring, has to be replaced or has already been replaced, some of it. The other unique or maybe unfortunate circumstance for us is we're right in the middle of a $26 million upgrade project. Things were already being switched over. Some stuff was switched over. Some stuff wasn't switched over. There were impacts, of course, on that construction schedule, which will we are still sorting out exactly how much of a delay that's going to be, as well as the cost we're not sure of. But what we're looking at here, and what we've had to do in the interim, is we've had to take our collection system. As I mentioned, this siphon complex end of the river is gone. It's out of operation, has been since September 23rd. We don't expect it to have it back in service until probably the first week of December. And we've had to set up two bypass systems out on our out on other areas of our collection system and pump over bridges and whatnot around to get into those lines that were still intact, and at the cost of $2,000-$3,000 a day for temporary pumping. So we've been having to deal with that. As I mentioned, the sort of the circumstances, Faribault's already seeing double-digit sewer rate increases to pay for this upgrade, and now we're looking at, you know, $1 million plus just in infrastructure costs, not to mention the operational costs, not to mention the replacement of those components that were being saved in the treatment plant, which, if we don't receive assistance, goes directly on to more sewer rate increases. So, like I said, we're unfortunate here that we're kind of seeing costs from planned costs as well as now unplanned costs. We were able, as the river receded, these don't show very well, as the river receded, we got the MPCA and the DNR out to take an inspection up and down the river and to really try to evaluate what are some of our collection system. And all they want to show is parts of our collection system, mm-hmm. and Faribault has actually done a fair amount of replacement the last 10 to 15 years, but they do run along the river. We now have part of the collection system lies about 4 feet away from the new riverbank, and this is about 2,000 feet away from the pictures I showed before. So we're identifying other projects we're going to have to do. It's not compromised right now, but given the fact that there's an 8-foot-high vertical bank 4 feet away from a manhole, we're not expecting that to last long term. So those are some of the next round of projects we're looking at. Also right by the water reclamation facility, same thing there. The bank is getting to the point. So like I said, we're looking at, from the public infrastructure standpoint, our main hit we're taking is on our water reclamation facility and our collection system, and the steps we've had to take to keep that system going once the plant came back online. And so we're in the process. We have a third contract being let, which will kind of finish off, and then we again are looking down the road at these future projects to try to realistically relocate the sewer away from the river.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
In the interest of time, I want to move to the Representative Drostowski has a couple of people to comment, and the time is rapidly getting pretty short here. By the way, as they're coming forward, I do want to point out that Representative Kath, Representative Fritz, and Representative Drostowski, all three were present during the negotiations, and were very involved in the discussions. Representative Fritz even making a quick trip for a meet the candidates forum down to Faribault and back up again. So,
Mr. Chair,
hey, Representative Drostowski, if you could do the same as Representative Fritz, introduce the folks that you have here. And I do ask, we still have Wadena to come forward in a totally different disaster, namely a tornado. So,
my introduction will be even quicker, Mr.
Very
Chair.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, members. I represent 28B. There's actually four communities that were flooded in our area, Pine Island, and also the cities of Zumbro Falls and Hammond, and a small community of Jarrett. I have with me Al Christensen, who is the soon-to-be mayor of Zumbro Falls, and was there quite a bit during, actually there providing a lot of the emergency relief during the flood, and Judy Radke, who is the mayor of Hammond.
Okay, welcome, and if you could both comment then on the impact on your communities.
Well, thank you for allowing us to speak quickly, and I'll try to be brief. I'll try to just summarize what the damage we had. I know we got time short, but one of the things that we wanted to press is that we were, you know, we're a proud community, and you can see that we took great pride in maintaining our area. And one of the things that happened was when the flood occurred on the 23rd, is a lot of this was, you know, destroyed and removed. And we, I mean, it was a devastating flood for us and totally unexpected or unplanned for, and the fact that our previous record was 30.8 feet at Zumbro Falls. Our even the gauge on the river only went up 31 feet and quit working during the flood, but the estimate for this flood came in at 36 to 38 and really exceeded in coverage our 500-year flood area. And it had a significant impact on our community, and the fact that really roughly two-thirds of the whole community was significantly impacted by this flood, with either severe damage or complete total damage to the businesses and facilities on running along and then what we call the old Zumbro Falls, again, along County 89, but also along the State Highway 60 and 63, which represents the main area of Zumbro Falls. In many cases, you know, flood levels reaching as high as 11 to 12 feet in some two-story homes. So it many, many of our homes, and we're looking at, you know, for, I know it's a small community and everything, but, you know, you're looking at 40 homes that may or may not be there when we're all done with, you know, the mitigation stuff. They probably had over 50% damage, and we're looking at significant amount of businesses too, upwards close to 20 businesses that sustained significant damage. And in a small town like that, in the lifeblood, you know, the opportunity and the help that you'll provide for us could mean the difference between us staying viable and not in the future. So again, I appreciate you taking the time, and I'll keep it short unless there's questions or something, and I'll let my colleague from Hammond discuss her area.
Okay, Mary Radke.
All right, for us, you know, kind of the same thing Al has said. You know, we're a small community of about 70 homes, and I can think of 10 homes right now that are going to not be able to rebuild. Part of it is, you know, just being in the floodplain, not having the funds to rebuild their home. You know, our main street consists of three businesses. You got a bar, a bank, and a restaurant. If those businesses aren't able to come back in, there's no reason to even move it to Hammond. You know, we appreciate all the money to rebuild our city, but if I don't have any residents living in Hammond or in Jarrett or County Road 68, you might just well save your money. You know, I need every resident to come back. You know, so I actually lived in the floodplain. I lived in the 100-year. My house sat 8.5 feet in the air. We put it in 5 years ago. You can see that my husband's not a midget. By the way, if you look at that, that is 8.5 feet in the air, and we have 4 feet of water in our home. So, I mean, the floodplain, something needs to be fixed. You know, we can't. I don't know if I can rebuild there. I can't go through 5 years of hard work again to lose it all in one night. This picture here is our ballpark, that the only one we had in town, you know. We still need to have our Friday night games. You know, it's important for the survival of Hammond. I don't know what else I got.
Well, thank you. We'll have to jump to Wadena because we have a tax committee meeting that has four provisions, as I mentioned earlier, in the bill. It convenes at 11. Many of you in the audience will probably want to go down to that meeting as well. What room is that? In room 5, so they'll continue the discussion, the overview of the bill. Okay, Representative Murdoch, if you will introduce the folks from Wadena, and a little different type of disaster, but a disaster that was very devastating to the community. So if you want to introduce the people representing.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Murdoch, District 10B, Ottertown, Wadena County. Far left here is Mayor Wayne Walden, Councilmember Don Niles, and Ann Pate. Ann Pate is the chair of the school board. And June 17th is a day we'll never forget for the devastation that hit Wadena. So we appreciate being included in this bill. And Mayor?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I guess if a picture could speak a thousand words, we have four of them, so we'll take care of our whole script. This is what's left of our high school. This would be an outside municipal swimming pool. That is a 25-year-old community center that held a hockey rink, the workout, the only community center the community had. And finally, just to demonstrate the human toll, this is Bob Randa, who lost his house. He, like many others, moved out of town, found a place in the country, and just this last week moved a home in there for his daughter. So the lot's been rebuilt upon, the tax base is returned. We had over 3,000 volunteers in the first few weeks after the tornado. They moved mountains. A million cubic yards of debris has been brought back to our temporary site and is in the process of being bid and moved right now. To be very brief, $750,000 in planning money to replace, for the planning of public infrastructure replacement is the goal of this session for the community of Wadena. Ann Pate is here on behalf of Wadena Deer Creek Schools. They are going to be breaking ground in March on a new school. We have the unique opportunity here to save millions of dollars in infrastructure, heating, cooling, community library, in conjunction with a school media center. Just such a unique opportunity to be able to capitalize on this once of many lifetime opportunities to really be able to save some public dollars in doing things once, doing things right.
First of all, I want to thank you for letting us be here today, and also on behalf of the Wadena Deer Creek School District and the city of Wadena, our hearts go out to these flood areas. We can really relate to the devastation that you're experiencing. And so on behalf of all of our administrative teams, I just want you to know, you know, please contact us. Let us know how we can help you. We definitely want to help you. The importance of these dollars, as far as it relates to the district spans three towns, Wadena, Deer Creek, and Bluffton. All three of these towns had tornadoes on June 17th. The statistics that I deal with on a regular basis with the school district is that in our elementary school alone, we have 65% of our students are on free and reduced lunch plans. That means they live at or below the poverty level. Wadena County is in one of the poorest counties of the state. You know, we regularly are in one of the five poorest counties of the states as far as economics. And so to bring these type of dollars into this situation, you know, will help stabilize the economy. It'll help vitalize. We are, just like all the flood areas, we have people who are very underinsured. I also serve on the long-term recovery committee. And so I deal with this day-to-day basis of people who are underinsured. We did not get individual assistance for FEMA dollars. So these dollars are very important to the viability of our area. And again, I just want to thank you all for your time. And again, out to the flood areas, you know, our compassion. And thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Committee. My name is Don Niles. I'm a city council person, and I'm the chair of the Wadena 2.0 task force that is charged with rebuilding public infrastructure. The task force is a collaboration of the city, the county government, the Wadena Deer Creek School District, Minn State School, Tri-County Hospital, the president of whom is with us today, Joel Byswinger, and the local Ag Society. That group was formed shortly after the tornado to pursue the possibilities for collaboration because of a clean slate that we have with the loss of the swimming pool, the high school, the ice arena, the community center, the fairgrounds. We have a lot to work with in terms of bare ground. In addition, there was a fertilizer plant immediately to the north of the high school, which has been relocated. That physical area may now be used for co-location possibly as well. We learned that anhydrous ammonia does not go well next to a high school, and that company very graciously moved. So we thank you very much for this relief. The school will be breaking ground in March of 2011, and our efforts of a high priority to rebuild the Regional Wellness Community Center will be kept on track with this grant. To underscore, I'd also like to point out one thing, that the $5.2 million in Article 2 is for the FEMA 1921 disaster in its entirety. So it goes to counties in addition to Wadena County, including Kitson, Polk, Ottertail, Sibley, Nicollet, Brown, Blue Earth, Faribault, Freeborn, Steele, Homestead, and Houston counties. So with that, I think this bill is an example of government working right. I commend all of you for working together to reach a consensus and to provide this emergency relief lastly, I'd like to echo what the other representatives have said about the individual assistance and how important that is in this bill. We did not have individual assistance in Wadena, and 4 months after the fact, we are living the effects of not having that assistance. So we would urge you to listen to what they said about the disaster. And my heart goes out to the folks in southern Minnesota who have suffered from those floods. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and committee, thank you very much. I'd like to echo what my colleagues here have said. I sat next to the current mayor of Zumbro Falls this morning, and I saw the red and the tired in his eyes. I was there the weeks after the tornado. It's gonna get better. It will. Just keep the faith and keep working and believe. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for coming down. And we are close to having to adjourn. Representative Howes, you distributed an amendment. We don't technically have a bill before us. This was an informational hearing. The legislation will be formally, because we're not technically in session until one when session.
Mr. Chairman, so if it could just be distributed so people could look at it and know what I was talking about. I just wanted to bring up the concern that I found out this morning about the New Richland Care Center. It's a nursing home that was flooded, damaged, it's closed, and they're sort of left out in limbo because they have to pay the state of Minnesota $12,000 a month for 3 months because they're closed to hold the beds. And I'm sure Representative Thiessen and Huntley know more about this than I would ever know. But they sort of got missed, and they're in the federally damaged disaster area. And it's a shame they got missed, and I know there's this agreement with leadership and the governor to not change things, and I don't look at this as changing anything, and I will honor that agreement on the floor, but I wanted to make sure that people's attention were drawn to it, and if there's some way that this committee or Huntley's or Thiessen's committees could do some letter or something through the agencies to allow them to do something without us taking legislative action today, but we could follow it up later, that would be great.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that brings up what I think is still, at essence, broken, and that is, after all this time, why we haven't, as a state, figured out how to equitably respond to disasters of one sort or another. And there are all sorts of disasters. If we should learn something from it, I would hope that maybe we begin building some cash reserve accounts with very clear criteria about when it is appropriate for state taxpayers, because that's what it is. I mean, this is equitable spending of state taxpayer dollars. When it is appropriate to do that and to have the cash there so that this sort of reactive thing isn't always happening. And I don't know what committee that falls under and who is a likely author, but it just seems to me that something is still very broken in terms of how we're prepared as a state to make these decisions.
That's a good point, and there are other issues during the discussions that surface that the Finance Division chairs within their jurisdiction will probably be taking up in January as well, relative to 12-8. But with that, for the members of the audience who want to listen to a continued discussion of this, the Tax Committee will be taking up their provisions in Room 5 in about 2 or 3 minutes. So I'll represent Broad, concluding comment.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to, Representative Hausman, I think Representative Pawlowski had a bill, actually, to set up some type of structural approach to disasters, and maybe that's something I agree with her 100%.
Okay, very good. And with that, thank you, and meeting adjourned.